Hey, this is Olympic gold medalist and TNA superstar Kurt Angle, and you're listening to the Mirror TKO podcast. Oh, it's real. It's damn real.
Last week, I luckily spent a little bit of time with the voice of TNA, JB, and afterwards, I asked him if he could do me one favour and one favour only, and that was to bring one of my favourite wrestlers of all time to London so I could meet him, I could shake his hand. But unfortunately, Jeff couldn't make it, so he brought Kurt.
Oh, wow.
No, you know I'm joking. So anyway, one of my favourite wrestlers, let's stop gushing, the only Olympic gold medalist in pro wrestling. How many, you hear that all the time. 14 world titles, won everything in TNA, won everything in everywhere. Kurt Angle is in the building. I'm here, Stan Ferdinand, with Simon Head. So we're doing a special edition TKO. Kurt, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Here. I'm happy to be here, and especially happy to be in London. Hopefully coming here twice next year, once for the tour for Impact Wrestling and also for the Olympics.
I found a place to train for the Olympics. The KO Gym,
yep.
If you know about it, they have an Olympic Greco-Roman wrestler named, forget his name, but I'm going to go there for a couple days while I'm in London. I'm going to train down there so I don't miss the whole week of training when I'm here in London. So we might even have like a fan interaction at that gym where fans can come in and watch me train Olympic style. We'll get it all to you and let you know what's going on. Yeah.
You're coming back. 2012 is going to be big year for the Angle, Mr. Angle, the Angle family.
Yes.
You're going to be here in January.
Yeah, we're going to be here on the 29th, I believe, of January. We'll be in London. This will be our fourth World Impact Tour here in England. We have done record sales, our highest selling. We doubled our sales from our first day last year, this year. So there's been a huge response for fans. There still are tickets left, but they're going fast. And we want everybody, we want to fill up, we want to sell out Wembley Arena and put on the best show we can. And we got great wrestlers coming over, including Sting.
Yeah, that's the big thing. This this event is not. It's not just anybody coming over. It's the absolute cream of the crop in the TNA industry, in the TNA roster. They're all coming over. This is yourself, Sting. I heard Sting really wanted to come over. You've said that you like London, so or the UK. So what's that going to be like?
I think we're going to have some great matches. I think that having Sting over here is something, you know, he hasn't been here in 15 years. When you have great athletes like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe and Matt Morgan coming, along with, you know, probably Beer Money and the Motor City Machine Guns, you're just looking for some of the best matches that TNA can put on. And right now, our roster is probably, without a doubt, the best roster in wrestling above the other company. We have so many great wrestlers. Mr. Anderson will be here, the Pope. We've got so many characters and so many great athletes that are coming over. It's bound to be one of our best shows.
And let's not forget the Knockouts.
Oh, of course, and the Knockouts, especially Velvet Sky. She's going to be here.
Especially Velvet Sky. I'm going to stop talking about that now. And then, yeah, so you alluded to it. So, yeah, we have, London is going to host the biggest sporting event. It's watched by absolutely everybody. You know exactly what it's like to be at an event like that, the Olympics, of course. 1996, Atlanta.
Yes.
You didn't just turn up. You turned up and took home what was rightfully yours.
Yes. I got to win both the World Championship in 1995 and the Olympic gold medal in 1996 in Atlanta. So that was the city that's kind of the city that defined me. You know, the World Championships year before, which is a non-Olympic year, we have World Championships. I won my first world title. And to win back-to-back is almost impossible. It rarely ever happens, but I was able to put it together and win back-to-back titles, World and Olympics. So I like to call it my city, Atlanta, Georgia. But I'm originally from Pittsburgh, but Atlanta, Georgia is a special city for me.
It sounds like something.
Yeah, and in terms of amateur wrestling and moving into professional wrestling, I was talking to Dan about this the other day. In American college sports, you've got that collegiate system there, and yes, you can work your way through, and you've got your pinnacle, which for wrestling is the Olympic Games.
Yes.
With other collegiate sports such as basketball, football, you've then got the professional sporting arena to move into. It's a little bit different with wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
What options did you have available to you once you claimed that Olympic gold medal? Did you have other offers on the table to go into other areas?
Yeah, I got a good offer from the UFC. I mean, it wasn't a tremendous amount of money, but it was, you know, what I would call fair. You know, they gave me a 10-fight deal a year for $20,000 a fight, but that's not enough money for a fighter. I mean, there was $200,000 a year to get pounded on. I wouldn't call that an incredible amount of money, and that's probably why I went the pro wrestling route. There were a lot more fans at the time, a lot more money. I waited a couple years, and then I started in 1999. UFC was still kind of getting there, but pro wrestling was the place to go, whether it was the WWF, WWE, or WCW. And I made a tremendous amount of money, and you know, then MMA caught on, and UFC started getting big in the early 2000s, and I started getting curious, and you know, every time I thought about doing it, something would happen, whether I broke my neck, you know, or I left WWE, and I signed with TNA right away, and then I went out to see Dana White, and he told me, well, you're going to fight for me, you can't wrestle. I said, well, Dana, I just signed with TNA this week, and I even told you I signed with you. I sent you a non-disclosure agreement so he couldn't tell anybody because we were going to make it a surprise. I was going to be at Bound for Glory that year at the pay-per-view for TNA. But Dana said, well, there's still time for you to quit TNA and come here. And so I told him I couldn't back out on TNA. They were very gracious. They brought me in at a time when I needed to leave WWE because I was really burned out. So I stuck with TNA, and Dana just told me, when you feel you're tired of wrestling, give me a call. So there were a couple of years ago where I had some personal problems with my marriage and everything, and I decided to call Dana White at that time. And he offered me another extensive contract, and I was getting ready to go. I took the UFC physical, I passed it, I was getting ready to fight, and we were determining starting dates. And unfortunately, Dana wanted me ready in 4.5 weeks, and it just wasn't enough time. Again, I backed out. Then I started getting some backlashing from the internet, from, you know, dirt sheets and stuff, saying, well, Kurt's full of it. He always says he's going to fight and he doesn't fight. Well, that's because there were terms that weren't agreed upon.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying out for the Olympics, and like I said, it's under my terms. I don't have to sign any contracts. I know how I have to train. I know who I have to beat. I know when I have to be ready, and you know, this brings my competitive spirit back in. At the same time, I can pro wrestle. TNA's given me all the time I need to train, giving me 25 to 28 days a month off where I can train for the Olympics. And so what better opportunity than to stick with pro wrestling, make the money I make in TNA, and represent TNA in the Olympic Games.
And in terms of, obviously, the difference between pro wrestling and amateur wrestling is... is that competition something that you really strive to get involved in and still remain in a competitive sport as well as the entertainment side of things?
They're two different worlds.
Yeah.
You know, when you're doing one, you have to turn the switch off of the other. You know, in amateur wrestling, you have to focus on your opponent and ignore the crowd and really go by reaction. You go by instinct. Pro wrestling, you got to think about what you're doing next. You have to include the crowd. You have to show charisma. You have to get the crowd emotionally involved. You have to show. You have to have a great psychology of a match ready, and you got to put on a great performance. They're two completely different things. So when I'm training for one, I'm not thinking about the other. I got to turn that switch off. And when I'm performing in one, I have to forget about the other and have to turn that switch off. So they're worlds apart. Probably the worst sport to cross over in,
yeah,
into sports entertainment. Because there is no, you know, in amateur wrestling, you just don't see anybody with charisma. It's not a charismatic sport, you know. Even in football, when they celebrate after a touchdown or a sack, you know, they're showing charisma. You know, basketball, when they dunk, they're showing charisma. And in amateur wrestling, the only time you see charisma is after you win. So it's just it's a very contained sport that you have to contain your emotions, and you have to go in there and you have to show no fear. And pro wrestling, you have to show fear. You know, you don't show excitement, you don't show anger. In pro wrestling, you have to show excitement, you have to show anger. That feeds off to the fans. So they're just complete opposites.
Did that the pro wrestling side of it, I don't think that necessarily came naturally to you. How did you get over that hump, that showing your emotions out? Because you would have done quite a number of years where you were just very driven, were very focused, which opponent next, let me take him out. And you went into a world which was, it's larger than life. It's supposed to be, you're meant to be superhuman. Mm-hmm. You're not, they very much played on your Olympics. You were Kurt Angle, the Olympic, the best of the world, the great. And when you was a not so nice a man,
yeah,
you played, that was fantastic. You did some great work, and I'm for one didn't particularly like you, but
right. I didn't like
that. I mean, he was doing a good job though.
I just did what I was told. I didn't know if I had. There is an it factor. You have to have that it factor. You have to be able to be a certain character that these guys want you to be. You have to portray that character, and you have to do it the right way. And WWE and WWF at the time, they knew what they wanted me to do because they failed the last time they tried it with The Rock. They tried to make him a babyface, and they pushed him down people's throats, and they talked how great he was going to be, and it backfired on him, and it made him the biggest heel in the company. With me, they said, you know what, we're going to do the same thing, but this time we know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
it's going to turn. He's going to turn on the fans, or the fans are going to turn on him. So I did the same exact thing as they tried when he was Rocky Maivia,
mm-hmm,
and they did the same thing with Olympic gold medalists, and the fans took a hating to me very quickly. And, I guess I had the it factor. I could somewhat act, and I played the character very well. I was pretty good on the mic. I was really good in the ring. And it just worked out. And, I did kind of get in there by forfeit because Austin was out with a neck injury. Triple H, I think, had a knee injury. The Rock's just started doing movies. Undertaker had a groin and pec injury, so they were looking around, and who do we get? Oh, how about that Olympic kid? Let's try him out. And it was kind of like they threw me into the water and said, you either sink or swim. Go. Right. Go do it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have much training, and I swam, thank God. Yeah.
And in TNA, there seems to be quite a big difference in the way the wrestlers actually carry themselves in the ring and on the mic. There seems to be a lot more freedom to express your personality in there. Would you say that was true compared to, say, WWE, yes, where you might have...
I was told exactly how to do it, what to do, what to say, and how to say it in the other company. In this company, I can be me, and I can say what I want as long as I follow the storyline. You get a lot more freedom to do and say what you want, which I think brings out your character even more because you're not playing that cookie-cutter character that the other company wants you to play, which has been done over and over and over again. Here you get the freedom to be you. You gotta bring out your own personality. I'll give you an example. If Jay Lethal could bring out his real personality, like the way he copies Ric Flair and the Macho Man Randy Savage, mm-hmm, Jay Lethal would be the best guy in the company. He doesn't know how to bring his own personality out to portray Jay Lethal. He's great at imitating people, but if he knew how to bring that one person that really defines him and bring him out, that guy would be he'd be making the most money in wrestling. He'd be the biggest, most popular guy in wrestling. And that's what I'm trying to say is you got to show your personality. You got to be you. and you got to portray either a babyface or a heel. You got to portray that character, but some part of you has to come out of
that.
And I did it in the WWE. I toned the line. And it was me, but I was told a lot of the times to do exactly what they told me to do.
What is it? Which do you prefer?
You know, I had a blast in WWE. The thing is,
not companies, heel or babyface.
What I'm getting to is, I like it better in Impact Wrestling, but I would love to be able to do comedy again, like I did the WWE. Mm. That's something I was never able to do here. As far as being babyface or heel, I love the heel part. I am much better at it, but as a babyface, I am me. I am Kurt Angle, the real person. I bring out the real emotion of what I have. I've been known to, you know, be in the ring and literally cry for real, you know, for things that happened in my life. I've shown my real emotion. So as a babyface, it's not that I'm dry or bland. I'm just Kurt Angle. Mm-hmm. As a heel, I become a completely different person. And a lot of times I like doing that. You know, I'd love to have another heel run. I just don't know if the fans will ever allow me to do that again.
Yeah.
Because now I have a factor, a certain respect factor that has become above just being a great wrestler, but, you know, one of the greatest ever. So it's like, you can never hurt Kurt. You can never hate Kurt Angle again. He's Kurt Angle.
Yeah,
it's kind of like Sting. You can never hate Sting again. He's just Sting. So I've gotten that respect, and it'll be hard to be able to turn that back again.
That's good. So you got TNA, they've got pay-per-view coming up, 12th
yes,
of June.
Yes, a very big pay-per-view, Slammiversary, and I have my match with Jeff Jarrett, which will be a number one contender match, and I imagine I'm going to beat him, and that means I'm on my way back to going for the title again, which is what I'm best at. So whether it's Sting or Mr. Anderson, it should make for some great main events in the future.
Yeah, this is the final chapter. This is the final battle. This is going to be. I know you said it's going to be for number one contendership, but really, it's more than that. This is the rivalry. This is the one everyone's talking about all year. Mm. It's the one that everyone will probably still be talking about next year.
We made a great storyline out of it, and even though a lot of fans were uncomfortable, and even somewhat Jeff and Karen and myself were uncomfortable, and even the other wrestlers around us were uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was a good story, and I think that Karen and Jeff played a very important role in it. You know, they made me vulnerable, and they made each other look like idiots, and you know, it just worked really well. And you know, a lot of fans kept Facebooking me and saying, "I don't think this is really good TV. I don't think I don't like what I'm watching." And then I'd say, "Well, I'm sorry, you know, but it's a storyline that has to be told." And they're like, well, I don't think I'm going to watch anymore. And then the next week, they would Facebook me again and say, I really don't like what I'm watching. I'm like, well, you watched again. Stop watching. Yeah. So whether you liked it or you hated it, you kept watching it.
That's it.
So,
it's getting a response either way, isn't it?
Yeah, it was working. So.
How awkward was that? I mean, how did that storyline come into being? Did someone sit you all down and say, This is what we're thinking about?
Or no,
did you guys cook that up
down
between you?
I set them down.
How easy was that to...
I sat the writers down and said, I want to do this.
And how did Karen and Jeff take to that? When you first floated the idea?
I think Karen was more hesitant than anybody of doing it, even though she did want to come back on TV. I went to the writers and said, I think this needs to be told. I think it's a good story. I think Karen can pull it off.
Amazing.
And I know that Jeff is great at being a heel. I knew that we could tell it the right way, and we did, and Karen did a phenomenal job, and Jeff played a perfect part, and you know, he basically relied on Karen the whole time, and you know, that made it great for TV, because now that Karen's out of the picture, you know, I haven't beaten Jeff in 5 months. He's beaten me every time. And now that Karen's out of the picture, people want to see me kick his ass.
Although you did angle slam him on the chair,
yeah,
only a few weeks ago.
Match, but
was it, yeah. But that must have been some retribution.
Yeah, because the chair was supposed to break and it didn't, so I'm sure it hurt pretty badly. Yeah.
So I had one real question about that. There was a little weird thing over the last kind of month and 2 months about your very special angle slam move and a certain someone on the other company using that move.
Yeah, I tweeted about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't watch WrestleMania. I had someone text me and say, "Hey, Randy Orton just used your finish." I thought, "Wow, that's kind of odd. I didn't retire yet." So I tweeted about Randy using my finish, and then a certain family member of mine. I went to bed. It was about 9:30. It was early, and my family members also use my Twitter, and they. And they'll tweet for me, and they'll do some things that I ask them to do. Mm. So they went on about talked about Jack Swagger. Is that his name? Jack
Swagger? Yeah, Swagger.
I don't even know.
I just know
that he's been using ankle lock, and yep. He wears the red, white, and blue singlet. I've never seen him wrestle, but I haven't complained about him in 2 years, so I don't know why I complain about him now. But somebody in my family tweeted about... Jack Swagger, you know, using my finish as well, and that he acts like me, and he's wearing the red, white, and blue, and so I got a lot of angry fans kind of backlash and saying, "Well, that wasn't your finish; it was Ken Shamrock's." And then I woke up the next day, I'm like, "What is this?" And I said, "Somebody hacked into my Twitter," and then I found out who it was, and so I had to change my my passcode so my family couldn't get in it, but. The fact is, yeah, Jack Swagger is not my finish, but I waited till Ken Shamrock retired before I used it.
Yeah.
And I kind of reinvented it because Ken just kind of would slap it in when somebody was down. I find ways of getting into it or if someone has a submission of getting a way back into the ankle lock. Yeah. I kind of reinvented it to where Shamrock never used it that way.
Yeah, I've seen you've jumped in, dived in with it, spun around.
Yeah, and so I just tweeted, well, at least I waited until Ken Shamrock retired. As far as I know, I haven't retired yet, and Jack Swagger's been using it for 2 years.
Mm.
So, you know, but Randy and I talked about the angle slam, and I said, well, at least if you're going to use it, Randy, give it a name because your announcers don't know what to call it. So Randy said, I'll think of a name. So mm-hmm. Randy's continuing to use it, and I don't mind. I mean, Randy's a good friend of mine, and you know, he called me and said, "What's the problem, man?" And I said, "Well, why would you use my finish at WrestleMania?" He said, "Kurt, imitation is a form of flattery." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, you know, I'm going to use your finish at the next pay-per-view."
Yeah.
He goes, "Yeah, I figured." So,
and you did.
Yeah, and I did. Yeah.
So is that kind of like an unwritten rule of wrestling that you don't?
Yeah.
You don't nick other people's signature moves. No, it's a bit like a comedian stealing someone else's material.
Yeah, you know, it's for Jack Swagger, I mean, all it does is, you know, most people just go, "Gosh, he's acting like he's Kurt Angle."
Yeah.
You know, that's got to be tough for him. You know, I kind of feel bad for him because I know it's not him that thought about doing mm-hmm. it. You know, it was Vince McMahon saying, "Let's build another Kurt Angle." And pretend that Kurt Angle doesn't exist. Well, I do exist. I'm an Impact wrestler, and it's not like the company is not succeeding. We're doing very well. We might not be doing as well as WWE in the United States, but go over to the UK and see what our ratings are like.
Yeah.
You know, well, we do exist, and there is a Kurt Angle still wrestling, and all you're doing is making Jack Swagger look like an idiot.
But that's it, because I guess. You know, the strength of any wrestler's character is their unique selling point, their USP. If you've got something that is your trademark,
mm-hmm.
the minute someone else starts using it, it cheapens what they're doing as well.
Yeah, so. It does. And, you know, but, you know, I know that it kind of sucks because I know, you know, I told Randy, you know, don't prostitute my finish. You know, he thanked me for having Jeff kick out at 2 3/4 on his finish. In other words, I didn't tell Jeff, "Listen, when I hit you with the RKO, you kick out right when I cover you."
Mm.
You know, I wouldn't do that to Randy.
Yeah.
You know, and he said, "Thank you for not prostituting it and having Jeff on purpose kick out right away."
Yeah.
I said, "Well, as long as you don't prostitute my finish, I don't care. You know, you can use as much as you want, but just remember when you do it, they're going to think of me." Mm. You know, when Jack Swagger's doing the ankle lock, they're thinking Kurt Angle. Mm. You know, so that, you know, it's something that guys these days, they got to get more creative about what they're doing. They can't just use people's moves, especially if they're not retired yet.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people have used other people's finishes. You know, we have. I know that James Storm was using Shawn Michaels' finish, the super kick. You know, So it was something that James had to come up with something else until Sean retired. Now James is back to using super kick, but he's really good at it. But, you know, it's just that when he does it, people go, oh, my gosh, it looks like Shawn Michaels finish. So you just got to be careful, and you got to be creative about what you do. We were just talking about Doug Williams' finish. I love it. No one's not ever done it before. It's a roll-up into a German, and it looks phenomenal. And, you know, he put a lot of thought into that. And when you get creative on finishes like that, that's when fans really enjoy, you know, seeing it, you know, transpire.
How much work goes into actually executing these finishing moves? Because they tend to be the big, spectacular, most dangerous moves you'll normally put in during a match. And you know, they're fight finishing moves. How much work between yourself and whoever it is you're wrestling with would you go through to actually make sure that you're hitting these moves clean and you're not causing too much damage?
We don't, I don't get in the ring at all before I wrestle. My moves are safe enough that I know whoever I do them to, I'm not going to injure.
Yeah.
When I do my angle slam, I guide my opponent down and I go with him and I land on my back to make sure he lands on their back.
Yeah.
He lands on his back. Mm. When I do my Germans, I always go low on the waist so I don't throw the guy on his head. I throw him on his back.
Shoot. Yeah.
You know, when I do the belly to belly, I always make sure I pop my hips so the guy doesn't lay on his head, he lands on his back. I don't need to practice moves. Ankle locks, that's fine, easy. Yeah. That's an easy move. It's very simple to slap it on. Sometimes I do have to practice on how I get it in. Like with the Undertaker, he would try to tombstone me and I crawl down his leg.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there are ways of getting into it that I do have to practice. Other than that, I don't really get in the ring and practice anything.
What about the moonsault?
No, you don't practice that. That's just stupid. I mean,
okay.
Put it this way.
Well, I didn't want to say it, but...
The more moonsaults you practice, the shorter your career gets. So you might as well just do it.
Do it as few times as you need to.
I never practiced that. The first time I ever did, I broke Bob Holly's arm. And that was back in 2002.
Was that just the knee coming down?
I just didn't know where I was going to land.
Yeah.
And I landed short. I put him in the middle of the ring. I didn't realize I actually go straight in the air when I moonsault.
Mm.
So when I landed, my foot came down
on his arm.
My arm broke both bones in his arm.
Yeah.
Then I smartened up and realized, okay, I need to put my opponent about 6 foot closer to the thing. So I never practiced that. I learned it by mistake. I broke a guy's arm.
Yeah.
You know, so I realized where I needed to place my opponent after that.
And
I
you never go practiced. From this.
Yeah, so I never practiced any of those high altitude moves. I dove over the top rope onto a guy or off of the stage. I remember diving onto an abyss. It was about 15 feet down. You can't practice those things. You just have to just not even think about doing it. Just do it. It's like when I wrestled Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 19, he was doing that move, that shooting star press, all day long on a crash pad. And he was landing all the way across the other side of the ring, two-thirds of the waist. So when I was in the middle, I was like, oh, this is going to be easy for him. But when he got up there, he waited too long. He thought about it, and he was like, And then he said, you know what, I'll do it. And he went to do it, and he goes, no, I won't. And he goes, fuck it, I'll do it. And so he was off balance, and by the time he came through, he landed right on his head, right in front of me.
Mm.
And that's because he thought about it. You can't think about that stuff. Mm. You just got to go.
There must be an incredible amount of trust between everyone when they're in the ring, because you know you're taking each other's careers and safety in each other's hands. So you know the amount of respect and trust must be pretty high.
Yes, it is. But you know what, you learn as you go along, because I'll give you some examples. You know, like some examples, like Jeff Hardy told me he was going to give me the Swanton from the top of the ropes onto the floor, and I thought, well, it's not going to hurt me. He's going to kill himself. Little did I know that every pound he had landed right on me, and I thought my stomach exploded.
Mm.
I will never do that again. That was just stupid of me to let him go 15 feet in the air, do a flip, and land with all his weight on me.
Yeah,
I mean, I damaged the cartilage in my rib. I popped the cartilage. I thought my stomach actually exploded. I couldn't move for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I laid outside. I couldn't even sell. I had to hide my face because I was in such pain that I couldn't even pretend to sell.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't selling at all because it hurt so badly.
Yeah.
So you learn sometimes things are too dangerous. That was just stupid on both of our parts, because if you would have missed me, he probably would have broke his tailbone, and him hitting me, if my stomach would have exploded, I would have died. But the doctor told me right there, yeah, if your stomach would have exploded, you would have been dead.
So, are there conversations that you've had to have with other wrestlers in the past? You say, okay, I'm not comfortable with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that quite common?
I won't take anything on my head, even though Jeff Jarrett dropped me on my head in lockdown. That was an accident. You learn that there are certain things you can't do. I broke my neck 5 times, so I won't let anybody German me.
Yeah.
You know, I will German them, but they can't German me, because if they don't do it right, I lay on the back of my neck.
Yeah. So just to finish up, you're in the UK only for a little bit time left. Tomorrow you're going to be at Wembley.
Yes, Wembley Arena. I'm hoping that a lot of fans come out and I'll have a lot of interaction. And you know, I'm very patient with the fans. I like to talk to them, get their feedback. I like to mingle with them. I'm not a guy that if I'm going to be over in London and I'm going to meet the fans, I might as well be there all day and show my respect for them for watching our show and paying to come to see me and paying to come to see us at Wembley Arena. I'm the kind of person that if I'm going to be here, then utilize me as much as you can. Let me mingle with the fans as long as the fans want me there, and let me do as much media as possible, because I don't like to waste my time.
Yeah,
I like to do things and get things done.
And you can go back home happy. And
go back home, yeah. So I'm one of those guys that if I'm going to be here, you better book my ass with a bunch of stuff and let me accomplish a lot of things, because I don't like to do stuff. I don't like to sit in my hotel room and do nothing. So that's why I'm here right now.
I thought it was because you liked me. But
Not after that comment about Jeff.
Listen, me and Jeff are that really disturbed you guys.
Got a little argument going, huh?
Well, you know.
He's trying.
Fundamentally, don't bring him in January. for his safety rather than anything else. That's it, obviously. That's if he survives after the 12th.
You and I both know that in real life you could take Jeff.
Oh, yeah, without...
Okay, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he hit me once. Oh, it's on video. He hit me once. And, I mean, it's not all that, is it?
No. You know what? I'll tell you one thing about Jeff. If I want to wrestle anybody every night, if I had to wrestle every night, it would be him. He has the ability to work around you, and I have wrestled main events within the last 4 months. He has not bumped me once. He literally knows how to work and not beat somebody up to the point that, because, you know, me, I've realized this last year, what the hell have I been doing the last 11 years? Every house show, TV and pay-per-view, I've gone 30 minutes and busted my ass.
Yeah.
And bumped like a son of a bitch. And this past year, I was like, why am I doing this at these little house shows with only 1,200 people when all they really want to see is me?
Yeah.
They just want to see me hit the angle slam.
Yeah.
So Jeff, last 5 months, he's been taking care of me. We've been having 15-minute matches. I haven't bumped one time. And he knows how to do that. You know, when you have wrestlers like that, they're that professional, that know exactly how to take care of their top guy by not having a bump, they're very important. They're very important people in the company, because those are the kind of people that help save me to make me my career longer.
Yeah.
You know, I signed a new 3-year deal with TNA just last week.
Oh, excellent.
So I'm here for the long haul.
Excellent.
And Jeff Jarrett is a lot of the reason why. And you would think that he'd be the reason why I'd leave. And he almost was. Mm. A couple of years, I almost went to UFC.
Yeah, of course.
And he almost was. I even asked for my release at one point. I asked Stacy Carter for my release because I wanted to go back to WWE because I was so angry about the whole situation. But in the long run, it was the best decision. Everybody's happy. I'm happier. Jeff's happier. Karen's happier. And I'm glad I didn't leave TNA, thank God. Because I would have been right
working the grind again in WWE, and yeah. that's the last thing I wanted to do.
Well, yeah, you've certainly excited and thrilled, scared the living hell out of me when you climbed that cage over the last... this is the first time I've ever met you, but I actually sat there and please don't do it. And then you went and did it anyway. So, listen, thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming here. You guys are great, man. I'm just happy that you guys spent the time to, you know, to interview me. And, you know, it's a privilege to be able to do interviews with you guys and just speak my side of the story and how I wrestle and what I do and why I do it. Yeah. Tell me what you want, I'ma show you.